101.9.
Please support community radio.
He was lured on Grindr by someone claiming to be a 30-year-old man, then violently assaulted in a secluded drainway by a group of teenagers.
You want to be gay?
They're part of a broader pattern of dozens of app-based attacks across the country, driven by extremist ideologies, not just ISIS-inspired, but even more commonly, far-right extremist rhetoric.
Welcome to This Way Up,
the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Lucia Chappelle. For half a century, I've produced queer radio alongside Greg Gordon, This Way Out's co-founder and coordinating producer. Today, it's with a heavy heart I must announce that Greg passed away on March 5th. We'll have more to say about that after this week's truncated news wrap. We'll report briefly on stories we may expand on in the future, like Russia's labeling the advocacy group Coming Out an extremist organization, Maryland's $1.5 million payout to homophobic parents, and more news. Then hate criminals in Australia use dating apps to ambush gays.
All that and even more, because you've discovered This Way Out. I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With an abbreviated edition of News Wrap, a brief look at a few stories in the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 7th, 2026. Russian repression strikes again with the designation of the LGBTQ plus advocacy group Coming Out as an extremist organization. A secret trial held on March 3rd in St. Petersburg granted a request from the Ministry of Justice. No details of the ruling were released. This is the first Russian queer organization to be officially banned since the Supreme Court invented an international LGBT movement to declare extremist. Coming Out's organizers have been operating outside the country since the invasion of Ukraine and say they'll continue to provide services to queer people in country and those trying to flee.
Deviant culture is how a new deputy minister in Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim's government wants to refer to LGBT people. Muhammad Rosli is responsible for religious affairs and is ordering the immediate change of terminology in public discourse and in social media. Human rights activists inside and outside Malaysia are condemning the move. Amnesty Malaysia calls it a reckless decision that will further marginalize and endanger LGBT people.
Maryland parents who sued their local school district over LGBTQ-themed storybooks are now $1.5 million richer. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the parents' favor in June 2025, ruling that they had the right to prior consent when such materials would be introduced in the classroom. Damages were awarded by U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman on February 19th. It's a judgment that puts public schools around the country on notice about potential right-wing pressures.
The International Music, Art, and Cultural Festival, Coldfest, is being targeted by Kyrgyzstan officials based on its alleged promotion of LGBTQ life and drug use. MP Bolot Saganyev spoke out against the event during a meeting of a committee on science, education, innovations, information technologies, culture, sports, and youth affairs. He called for the organizers to be investigated, but a probe already conducted by the Ministry of Internal Affairs found no substance to the accusations. Coldfest's organizers argue that the event is a boon to tourism in Kyrgyzstan, bringing more than 10,000 guests from 30 countries. It's scheduled for July 24 through 26.
Veteran human rights activist Peter Tatchell is not letting the opening of London's first Chick-fil-A restaurant go without notice. The U.S. fast food chain has a long reputation for its support of homophobic causes, although it now says its charitable giving is focused on education, homelessness, and hunger. Tatchell organized a picket line at the Kingston-upon-Thames location on March 5th. He says that efforts to have a dialogue with Chick-fil-A officials have been rebuffed.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin's legendary LGBTQ bar, This Is It, may be out of business, but its legacy will be felt forever as an official state historic site. This Is It opened in the pre-Stonewall world in August 1968. Sarah Freiheit is a granddaughter of the original owner, June Brain. Freiheit said, for decades, This Is It was the go-to destination in times of crisis, in times of celebration, and those times when just being with your community was the best possible comfort. The Wisconsin Historical Society approved a state historic marker for the landmark on March 4th.
Meanwhile, the news was not so good for Cardiff's Queer Emporium, what's been called South Wales' most recognizable LGBTQ plus enterprises, announced its closing on March 4th. The Queer Emporium has been a meeting place, creative venue, and community hub since 2021. Escalating operating costs are forcing the shop that's mostly run by trans, intersex, and non-binary workers to close. The team expects to continue at festival pop-ups in Wales and across the UK.
In other news, trans service members being forced out of the US military are pressing the Justice Department to move their case forward before separation proceedings are initiated. US District Judge Ana Reyes has given the government until March 11th to respond to a request to schedule the trial.
Asylum seekers Ludovic Mbak of Cameroon and a woman identified as Farah from Morocco are fighting the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. ICE is threatening to send both back to their anti-LGBTQ countries where their lives are in danger.
British female track and field athletes will now have to pay for their own World Athletics required SRY sex tests. The International Athletic Governing Body, used to provide financial aid for the tests, intended to prove that the contestants in all female category championships are not trans or intersex. UK Athletics has no hardship fund for financially disadvantaged women.
Menaka Guruswamy could be India's first out MP. Guruswamy was the senior advocate at the Supreme Court of India, who argued the case that decriminalized same-gender sexual activity in 2018.
Senegal's National Assembly will be debating Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko's bill that would enhance penalties for LGBTQ organizing and sexual activity on March 11th.
Foster homes in the U.S. no longer have to affirm their support for children's gender identity transitions. The Trump's Health and Human Services Department has rescinded that Biden administration guidance.
And two drag performers from Brisbane have beaten a conservative Christian activist with an appeals court overturning the dismissal of their vilification complaint against him. Johnny Valkyrie and Dwayne Hill perform under the names Queenie and Diamond and sued Lye Shelton over his social media criticism following their drag queen storytime event.
And that's a shortened news wrap. Global queer news with attitude for the week ending March 7th, 2026. Some of these stories will be expanded on our next program. Until then, follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Marcos Najera. Stay healthy.
And I'm Ava Davis. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I'm Brian DeShazer. This Way Out is deeply saddened to share the passing of Greg Gordon, co-founder and longtime coordinating producer of This Way Out. Greg died peacefully in his sleep on May 5th. For decades, Greg Gordon helped bring LGBTQ voices, stories, and culture to radio stations around the world. His work began in the early days of queer community broadcasting in Los Angeles. In 1974, he was part of the Gay Radio Collective at listener-sponsored station KPFK, helping produce IMRU, the oldest LGBTQ-produced radio series in public radio. At a time when queer lives were rarely heard on the public airwaves, those programs created space for LGBTQ people to tell their own stories in their own voices. Friend and longtime collaborator David Hunt remembers that moment as truly groundbreaking. He says, IMRU literally put broadcast tools in the hands of LGBTQ people and provided a platform so we could tell our own stories, sing our own songs, and speak our own truth in our own voices. Greg's vision for independent queer media grew even further in 1988 when he co-founded This Way Out. From the program's launch on April 1st of that year, Greg shepherded the weekly broadcast for nearly four decades, guiding the production of 1,979 programs heard on community and public radio stations across the United States and around the world. For many listeners, especially in the years before the internet, This Way Out was a lifeline. Mark Sophos remembers discovering the program when he was still closeted in the late 1980s. The show soon became essential listening at the New York station he founded, WDFH. Especially during those closeted years, he wrote, This Way Out was a lifeline for me. Community radio stations carried the program for decades. Simon Fresh of KMUD in Northern California recalls the early days when the show arrived by mail. We used to receive a cassette every week, he said. It's impressive how long Greg stuck with this project. I'm grateful. Those who worked with him remember him not only for his dedication to radio, but his warmth. Mark Sophos says that in their many conversations, Greg was so friendly and warm, whether they were discussing the programming or simply catching up. Greg leaves behind a remarkable legacy, nearly half a century of pioneering LGBTQ radio broadcasting, countless stories shared on the air, and generations of listeners and producers who found community through his work. His broadcast legacy is also preserved for future generations through the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, a collaboration between GBH and the Library of Congress. Greg Gordon's voice, vision, and commitment to independent community radio helped shape the sound of LGBTQ broadcasting around the world. He will be deeply missed. Greg is survived by his brother, co-founder, and associate producer of This Way Out, Lucia Chappell, his friends and colleagues. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out. I'm on the verge of vision to us a caught in the nexus. Reasons I learned to love, reserve your judgment, retell your principles. So hold in my breath and don't say a touch. Now I'll be dead. Gay dating apps are being used in Australia to lure men into hate crime ambushes. Films of some attacks are showing up on extremist online networks. New federal hate speech laws were rushed through following last year's anti-Semitic Bondi Beach mass shooting. However, those protections do not currently include anti-LGBTIQ plus violence, while the state of New South Wales reports nearly 200 incidents since 2023. Sydney correspondent Michael Brown's report contains depictions of violence that some listeners may find distressing.
A recent investigation by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation has found a rise in serious assaults against gay and bisexual men over the past 2 years. In several cases, victims were lured through dating apps, attacked and filmed. Some of those videos were later circulated in online chat groups sympathetic to Islamic State. The investigation also examined the influence of Sydney-based preacher Wissam Haddad, who has publicly expressed support for extremist interpretations of Islamic ideology. It's important to note that extremist rhetoric does not necessarily reflect the beliefs of the broader Muslim community. Extremism researcher Josh Roos from Deakin University in Melbourne, told the ABC that networks connected to Haddad are central to the spate of attacks in Sydney.
The link to Wissam Haddad is very important. This is an individual who has been preaching hate on our streets for many years, very strategically staying on the right side of the law. He has a strong following, amongst whom we've seen many individuals who then gone on to be convicted of violence or linked to Islamic State.
These findings suggest that the attacks are part of a broader pattern of ideologically motivated violence, not isolated incidents. In the ABC investigation, Sydney preacher Wissam Haddad made statements expressing extremist views on homosexuality.
Homosexuality under the Sharia, after being judged with the Quran and the Sunnah by an Islamic judge in an Islamic court in Islamic lands, is punishable by death.
Extremism researchers note that statements like these have influenced networks connected to attacks against gay and bisexual men across the country. Experts also note that these attacks are not limited to one ideology. Heather Corkhill, legal director at Equality Australia, told SBS News,
they're part of a broader pattern of dozens of app-based attacks across the country, driven by extremist ideologies, not just ISIS-inspired, but even more commonly, far-right extremist rhetoric.
While these attacks are driven by multiple extremist ideologies, the following clip illustrates one incident that the ABC says is an ISIS-inspired video that surfaced online in chat groups. This was obtained by the ABC after it was shared on social media.
Kill him, kill him. You want to be gay? You want to be gay? Yeah?
New South Wales police said they could not identify the attackers or the victim in this clip, according to the ABC. Haddad's centre was ordered closed after it was found to be linked to the Bondi Beach terrorist attacks in December 2025. Another more recent dating app attack, highlighted in the ABC expose, involved a 20-year-old man in Western Sydney. He was lured on Grindr by someone claiming to be a 30-year-old man, then violently assaulted in a secluded drainway by a group of teenagers. After the assault, the attackers stole his phone, he was left helpless, and the attack video was later shared online. The victim was hospitalised with serious facial injuries, including a deviated septum that still causes him breathing problems. Police say the attackers were part of a jihadist network involved in other crimes. One of them, a 17-year-old, pleaded guilty to aggravated robbery but walked free on probation with no conviction recorded, despite being implicated in similar offences. Other perpetrators of similarly motivated crimes have also recently walked free on probation as well. The day after the ABC report aired, New South Wales Premier Chris Minns responded to the allegations.
They're absolutely shocking examples of violent crime in our community directed against individuals because of their sexuality. I've spoken to the Cabinet Office and the Attorney General's Department today about looking at changes to the law to put in massive new penalties specifically to target this abhorrent behaviour.
His comments underscore the seriousness with which his government says it is taking these attacks. On the day of the Sydney Mardi Gras parade, I spoke with members of the LGBTQ plus community and their allies to hear their reactions to the news story.
As the mother of two queer identifying children, I'm of course horrified that this can happen in this city, that I can feel safer in other countries than I feel in this country sometimes. And that makes me very, very sad. Just the fact that it existed, no matter who did it, is a bad thing, is a horrible thing. That's all I can say about that.
Do you believe that the New South Wales government should include LGBTQ people underneath its hate speech laws?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It shouldn't be restricted to religion. It could be restricted to. It shouldn't be restricted to that. It shouldn't be restricted to sex. It shouldn't be restricted to age. It shouldn't. It should apply to this community as well as religious communities.
I think it's shocking, and it brings back some of the violence that's happened to gay men, bisexual men, but also lesbians and other members of our queer community over many years. And it's shocking that it's happening now.
What do you think the New South Wales government's response to that is?
Well, I don't think it's strong enough yet, but by the same token, this whole sort of luring people through apps and things is a relatively new phenomenon, and I think they need to act on it quickly.
What sort of laws do you think should be brought into?
Well, I think there should be draconian penalties, but the app providers should be cooperating with the government and the police.
Yeah. Do you think it's enough just to bring in a very heavy law against it?
No, I think the police have to act on it.
It's a horrible sense of deja vu. Sydney has a long and unhappy history of gay bashings, which the police just wrote them off as death by accident or whatever, suicide. One of them was a young American mathematician who only just completed a PhD, found dead at the base of North Head on the entrance to Sydney Harbour. That crime was written off for years and years and years as suicide. His family never accepted it. It was only a couple of years ago that, after many, many inquests, they finally said, no, he was murdered. It seemed to have been getting better with the gay bashings, but it's just a horrible feeling of, oh, God, here we go again.
What do you feel about the religious extremist aspect of this?
Trouble is, it makes all religious people look bad, and not everyone. Any sort of extremism is to be condemned, and violence is never acceptable, regardless of what you might think. Religious motivation you might claim justifies it. It doesn't.
The New South Wales law as it stands does not cover hate speech against LGBTQ people. What do you think the government should be doing now?
Well, absolutely, it should. The legislation should be amended. Absolutely.
So what should Chris Minns, the Premier, actively be doing now?
Well, as Premier of the state, you're in a position of authority. You can't just stand back. You might say he deplores it, but actually get some laws through, get it into Parliament, get it voted on, make it legislation, make it. Don't just say how appalling it is. Well, of course it is, but make it law. Today is Mardi Gras parade, so having spoken about a grim thing like that, we're still here, and we're not going anywhere, and we celebrate, and that's exactly what we should be doing.
So my name's Lizzie, I'm the convener of Queer Amnesty here in New South Wales in Sydney. Obviously, we're really concerned about the increasing levels of violence against our community, but equally so, we're concerned that these sort of things are turned by governments and the media into excuses for more Islamophobia, and we don't want any of that. What we'd like is a Human Rights Act. What we'd like is laws that cover targeted violence and hate speech and hate crimes against all minority communities, not just the ones that governments pick and choose. All of us have a right to be safe. All of us have a right to live free from discrimination and violence. And we need a structure in this country to support that. And we need a Human Rights Act.
At the moment, the hate speech laws do not cover the LGBTQ community. What do you think about that?
Look, I think that's a mistake. Like, you know, now that this is this news article has come out, which is terrible. Those experiences are terrible and undoubtedly underreported, underprosecuted as well. We're not seen as a priority. You know, we're not treated the same as other groups who might have experienced a similar thing. We're not the only group that's ignored in terms of, you know, looking after our safety. What we need are legal structures that build safety, community, and send the message that hate against any group is not okay. Violence against anyone is not okay.
Do you think that'll be enough to stop people committing these sort of crimes?
I think it's where we need to start.
In late February 2025, Equality Australia released a media statement revealing nearly 200 reported incidents of anti-LGBTIQ plus violence in New South Wales since 2023. The offences, including assault, aggravated robbery and affray often involved teenage boys, with dozens of cases linked to perpetrators using dating or hookup apps to lure victims. Legal director Heather Corkhill called the figures likely the tip of the iceberg, noting they didn't include verbal abuse, online hate, or doxing. She warned of a growing online culture radicalising young men and fueling real-world violence. Equality Australia has called for expanded hate speech laws, stronger hate crime penalties to make offences motivated by hatred of sexuality or gender identity more serious, and better reporting, monitoring, and victim support, stressing that legal changes alone are not enough to stop this broader pattern of hate. Equality Australia's CEO Anna Brown told the ABC that the rise in hate crimes is not just confined to Sydney alone.
What we've seen in recent months, and indeed over the last couple of years, is a disturbing escalation in hate threats, online attacks, verbal abuse, harassment, and sadly, vandalism and bashings as well. So we've had spates of bashings in Sydney, and in fact, parts of across Australia in different states and territories, targeting men using the Grindr app. And we've also seen, at its worst, these attacks getting with physical threats of violence and bashings in for instance, Wet Reservoir in Melbourne. A couple were attacked with a machete in Rundle Street Mall in Adelaide. A couple holding hands walking along the mall were attacked, and one ended up in hospital with their jaw broken. But it's extremely alarming. And in New South Wales, we have really significant instances as well.
Considering how easy it is to set up a fake profile on a dating app, an article published by the Australian research-based news site The Conversation notes, it's important to emphasise that members of minority communities are not responsible for hate crimes, and that individual precautions can never be completely foolproof. Recent Australian history demonstrates that where discrimination and exclusion of LGBTQ plus people are normalised in public life, offenders are empowered to rationalise and normalise violence. It's yet to be seen how governments, both state and federal, the police and the courts, respond to these latest challenges.
That was Michael Brown reporting from Sydney. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Marcus Nahra and Ava Davis, and produced by Brian DeShazer. Michael Brown was our feature producer. You heard music from Seals and Crofts and Devora. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Tanya Kane Perry and Julie Reisinger, Richard Burke and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for us at This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065 Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening. Online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on CHMA, Sackville, New Brunswick, WELT, Fort Wayne, Allen County, Indiana, 2MCE, Broadhurst, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and
stay tuned.
It seems today that all you hear is old country singers and boring rap beats. But where are those good old radio programs that we all used to enjoy? Lucky you've got Bangers with Claire. Lucky there's a show at Saturdays at 10 with all the things that make you dance and smile. It's Bangers with Claire. Go stream Bangers with Claire Saturdays at 10 on CFRC.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo! Cuomo, my goodness! Nico Cuomo with a touchdown!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
And good morning. It is 7:30 a.m. here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca for those of you listening in through the web. We are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queens campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So this week we have a good combination of artists that are so small that I could find zero information about them, but I love their music and wanted to feature them, and some artists where they're part of, you know, like a major group, or they're a bigger name within their local scene, but this is a smaller project by them or a newer project by them. So we're going to kick it off today with a good representation of the latter half of that, Toro with Cruel to be Distant. This was released as a single on February 25th. Toro is a Toronto-based alt-indie R&B duo with dream pop and jazz inspirations. This song is in anticipation of their upcoming album, Act One, releasing April 2nd. This is made up of the jazz pianist, singer-songwriter Cynthia Toro, as well as Brendan Canning of Broken Social Scene, which I would consider to be pretty big in Canadian music and radio. And they have an upcoming live show in Toronto on May 1st at the Drake Underground, so definitely check them out if you enjoy this track, or if you like Broken Social Scene and you want to get into one of the side projects. After that, we have Louis Dice with Hochchamp, released off of the album Ex Aqueo, released February 27th. Louis Dice is a Quebec City-based electronic ambient experimental project. There's a lot of interesting sonic textures and layering. This is entirely self-produced, composed, recorded, and mixed, I believe with the exception of a couple tracks that had vocals borrowed from a friend as well in the scene. And it was just a very interesting project. It's not very often that I feature more instrumental or like ambient tracks, and I'm trying to do a better job of representing that scene in Canada, so here's this. And then after that, we are going to finish this set off with Bonne Nuit Chérie and Sortie de Secours, released as a single on March 11th. This is a Montreal-based alt-pop project of Florence Crête Lafrenière. This is a song that evokes what we try to hold on to when we know full well that we should let go of everything. It speaks of addiction, toxicity, heartbreak, and that suspend moment when we recognize the end without yet wanting to experience it. This is off of their first EP, XX, releasing the 1st of May this year. So keep an eye out for that. And without further ado, we are going to kick it off with Toro and Cruel to be Distant on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Something deep in-
Welcome back. You just heard from Bonne Nuit Chérie with Sortie de Secours. Before that, we had Hochchamp by Louis Dice. And at the very top of that, we had Cruel to be Distant by Toro. I don't know why I can't say that today. Coming up next, we have some more interesting artists, one of them who is one of those small artists I was talking about that has zero information available. So we're going to kick it off with Jason Zarafa with Hope/Home, released as a single March 13th. Jason is originally from Montreal, Quebec, and is now based in Phoenix, Arizona. This is a song about how hope and the idea of home can leave us feeling trapped if we don't accept our fate and break free. This is off of the debut album In the Long Run, which is coming out on the 3rd of April. And this song and the whole album was influenced by Phil Spector's Wall of Sound production style and the music of the 60s that Jason has been obsessed with since they were a kid, which is really interesting because in my music course today we were talking about this, which literally just like before the class started, I found this song and was adding it into this playlist. So it was just like a really strange correlation. And after that, we have Casanova Frankenstein Jr. with James Dean. This is off of their newest album, Argo's Waiting, released March 13th. It's Halifax, Nova Scotia-based, I guess, indie pop rock adjacent. And this is an artist that had absolutely nothing about them online, couldn't even find social media. So without further ado, we're going to kick it off with Jason Zarafa and Hope/Home on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Been a long time coming, for I could finally see. Eyes reveal nothing but the shade of gray underneath. Spent a long time running to a place that I couldn't reach, hoping to find something in a dream, but I couldn't see.
And you just heard from Casanova Frankenstein Jr. with James Dean. Before that, we had Jason Zaroffa with Hope/Home on CFRC 101.9 FM. This has been What's Brewing. We're heading into our last few songs of the half hour. So we're going to kick it off with another super tiny artist. I have never heard of them prior to this, and it seems like they're just starting out in their career, so I'm excited to see where they go. But this is Nova Noir with Lilith. This was released as a single on March 6th, and they are a Winnipeg, Manitoba-based shoegaze alt artist. This is the only the second track that they've ever released. And there's not much about them online, but I hope to hear from them in the future. And then after that, we are finishing things off with Fudge with two U's. This is their track L'Abomination, released as a single on March 13th. They're Montreal-based sludge doom garage rock. And this song actually leans a little bit more Montreal indie in the chorus, and I think you'll know what I mean when we get to that point. But the song explores themes of change and monstrosity. It's off of their upcoming new album, which they've only hinted at. We don't have an official release date. We don't have a name, but we do have an album release show in Montreal on June 18th at Cabaret Foufoun Électrique. So maybe June 18th is the album release date, but it's not always timed that way. But I've listened to Fudge many a time over the past few years. I've played them before on my other show, so I have faith in what this project will look like. I'm excited. I'm going to pre-save it once that even it becomes a thing. But without further ado, we are going to finish things off today, starting with Nova Noir and Lilith on CFRC 101.9 FM. This has been What's Brewing.
Are you listening from inside a local prison, or do you have a friend or loved one in a local prison or youth detention center? Calls from Home is a monthly radio program for you. On Calls from Home, we share voicemails, messages, song requests, and dedications. Anyone can contact us with a message or song request for a friend or loved one on the inside. To get in touch, call or text 613-917-1390. Email cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net or send us a message on Instagram at cfrcprisonradio. The CFRC radio signal reaches the following local and regional prisons: Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay and Frontenac, Joyceville and Pittsburgh, the Sundance Youth Detention Center here in Kingston, Quinte in Napanee, and the Cape Vincent Correctional Facility in upstate New York. Messages and song requests will be broadcast once per month on Wednesday between 7 and 8 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM or on the web at cfrc.ca. For 2025, Calls from Home will air on the following dates: April 16th, May 14th, June 11th, July 9th, August 6th, September 3rd, October 1st, October 29th, November 26th, and December 24th. Please send in your message at least one day before the broadcast date. These upcoming show dates, contact info, and additional information is available online at cfrc.ca or on Instagram at CFRC Prison Radio. We look forward to receiving your messages and sharing them over the air.